All right. Right, we are recording. Okay, so we are now in week two of our program. And today is really simple. It's just me. In fact, it's just all of us. The beauty is that it's not just me who's going to be answering questions. It's all of us, because some of these questions, you guys probably have better answers than I do. So please feel free to chip in so that we can enrich this experience for everybody on the call. The only thing is that I actually don't have a lot of questions that you guys sent me. So I guess you guys were happy with what you got this week, and maybe I answered all your questions, because I actually did not receive any questions this week. In fact, I only have two questions. One from Zibu, which you sent me yesterday, and I responded to you via email, and I looked at your question again. I'll read it out to everybody. I looked at your question again today during the day, because I only saw it this morning, but I see that the email you sent, you sent your email yesterday. I looked at it again and I thought, we may not do justice if we answer this question on today's call, because I feel it's a nice follow-up to what we did this week, which is what I want to do next week, which I'll talk about just now. So I want to suggest that I want to suggest two things. One, I'd like to do a one-on-one call with you, Zibu, maybe tomorrow, where we unpack your question following the framework that I taught on this week's lesson. Just follow that framework. We record that call, just you and I, we record that call, and then we upload it so that everybody can actually see how we broke down your question by following that framework. And I think it will give us a nice start to next week's session. So that's what I want to recommend. But let me read your email, because I'm sure people are wondering what was the question, and if that's okay with you, Zibu, can I just read your email as you sent it to me?
Absolutely, please do.
Okay, cool. So I'm just going to read Zibu's email, guys, so you can all hear. It says, "Hi, Sia. I hope you're doing well. Just finished listening to week one, which articulated info I have known while also addressing questions I have had. Awesome. Thank you, Zibu." And then it continues, "As it happens, I had already embarked on my partnership, though I hadn't thought of it in the context of the program. I'm trying to get interns from top-tier US universities to do 4 to 6 weeks internship with African startups. These are credible entities that have already attracted financing from international organizations and investors. Occurred to me that they could benefit from a short focused engagement with tech and MBA grad students. The students themselves have struggled to secure internships this year, with many of them canceled because of COVID. So from my perspective, this would be a mutually beneficial arrangement. It would also be a feather in the cap to have done work that benefits developing countries." All right, so here it goes. My question: I sense that I phrased my ask more as an ask for us, meaning for the African side, rather than a win-win for all parties. How do I recover from that in the follow-up engagement? Kind regards, Zibu. I hope you guys got that. So Zibu wants to set up this partnership between African startups that have already been financed, meaning they're going concerns that are already doing what they are set out to do as businesses. And she wants to bring in interns from the US, people who are from the tech space and who are also MBA graduate students. So the question is, because of the fact that she's already sent out a request to those guys or to the universities, which came across maybe as, "Here we are in Africa, I'm representing African startups, can you come and help us," that type of thing. How do we reposition that ask in a way that makes it very enticing for them, that shows them that this is a wonderful opportunity? So I really, really like this question, because I feel it touches on what I was talking about earlier in the week, on the recording that I sent you guys, the letter, for instance, that I sent you, as well as the framework that I taught this week. So what I'm suggesting, now that you know what the question is, what I'm suggesting is that Zibuye and I unpack this on a recording tomorrow. So it will be just the two of us just unpacking this question. We'll record everything so you guys won't miss anything. And then once we've broken it down and we've answered this question, I will upload that recording because I want to follow the framework, as I said, that I taught you. If you haven't checked this week's notes, please, you know, go through the recording that I sent you. So that's how I want to tackle your question, Zibu. Would you be okay with that approach?
Yes, I would. Thank you very much. I actually would appreciate that.
Cool. Let's do that. So let's touch base on WhatsApp and just confirm the time after this call for tomorrow then.
Awesome. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you. All right. The other question that I received was from Amanda. And I see she's really struggling to connect because she kept coming on the line. And I see she dropped off twice already. But yeah, well, here's the question that she sent me. I'm also going to read her email. I'm just scanning through to see if there's nothing too personal that she may not want me reading on a live call. So I don't see anything. If anything, I think what she's saying in this email, or was it the earlier email? Let me read the email. Okay, fine. So it says, "Hi, Sia. I love the advice you gave with having to listen to the audio for week two." Meaning, I think what she's referring to here is the fact that I said, download the audio on your phone. If you look at the notes that I sent you, we've got the video, which you can watch online. By the way, you can also download it if you've got one of those extraction software that can just, you know, save it on your device. But what I also did, I added an audio, which you can, it's literally just a download file for you to download the audio. Ideally, I'd like you to have this on your phone. I mean, at least that's how I find easiest for me to learn a lot of things. If I've got learning materials on my phone and I can just, you know, put on my headphones and listen to the lesson while I'm doing other things, whether it's just housework or just, you know, whatever, you know, the kind of stuff that you get lost doing in the house or outside of the house for that matter, or sometimes when I'm driving. But yeah, so that's basically what I said. So I think that's what she was referring to about how to listen to the material. Anyway, it continues. She says that what I suggested will help her. And then it continues. So for me, this is the question I have for today's session. How do you get someone from the company you want to partner with? Sorry, how do you get someone from the company you want to partner with to vouch and give a good word for you without making it seem that they are biased because they know you? Regards, Amanda. So that's the question. The way I'd like to go about this question, because it's so broad and it's not necessarily about partnerships, I would like to invite you guys, because a lot of us on this call, in fact, all of us on this call, have experience that could actually benefit this question. So I'd like anyone on the call to step in and give advice, because at some point or another, we've had this situation in our own businesses. I'll read the question one last time. Hey, Noma, I see you are on there. So I'll hand it over to you, but let me read it quickly one last time. How do you get someone from the company you want to partner with to vouch and give a good word for you without making it seem that they are biased because they know you? So that's the question. Over to you, Noma.
I'm actually not answering the question. I wanted to add to her question because my emails bounced in terms of sending you something similar. And I just wanted to add on to Amanda's question in the fact that besides them vouching for you, how do you then get them to not even about giving you a good reference, but also giving you personally honest feedback? So I will give an example, which I think, you know, just leads on from her question. when I've worked at a certain institution, I used to do their events. But every time they say, well done, thank you, it was fantastic. And I'm sitting here saying, but give me critical feedback. So I think my addition was, yes, how do they vouch for you? But at the same time, also give you honest feedback whilst they are trying to vouch for you as well.
Awesome. Okay, cool. Thanks, Norma. As soon as you've raised your hand, so I'll hand over to you.
Assuming nobody else has a question or a response, because actually my comment is preceded by a question, which is, if I understood Amanda's question, it is how to get people to vouch for you without appearing to have a relationship with you. If it's a person who works for a company that you would like to, you know, to work with. But my question would be, how can a person vouch for you unless if they know who you are, whether they've worked with you or this, from my perspective, you cannot speak for the quality of somebody's deliverable unless you've had, if you've had prior experience with it. So I'm hoping that also she can help us to, help me to understand the question better. I don't know, maybe I'm a little bit off.
I think you are actually spot on. I think you're raising a very good point. I think her question, I like the way you interpreted this question. I want to add to that. So don't go off the line, because I would like you to, because I think there are two ways we can approach it. And I'd like you to take it from the way you asked that question and say, assuming that they don't have to hide that they know you, what would you say? Assuming that the response is, yeah, well, they can say that they know me, but it mustn't be seen as if they are biased because of that. If they are vouching for me, they must back it up with, maybe I've worked with her and this is what she did. I'm not just saying choose her because I know her. I'm saying choose her because, yes, I know her, but this is what I know about her. She's good in this area and that area and that area. So I'd like you to maybe, let's go with that line, and maybe you can comment on that. So, but let me look at her question, because I think there could be two ways it can be looked at. She says, without making it, I think the other thing is, in addition to the question you just asked of whether, how can they vouch for you if they don't know you? But I think for her, it's more a case of, are they vouching for you simply because they know you, even if you're not good? Or, which is where the word biased kind of comes in. Are they just being biased because they know you, because they're related to you, not necessarily because they think you're good? So, but I want us to go with what you said, because nobody can vouch for you if they don't know you. So let's go with that they do know you. So what can you say to that one?
Well, you know, I don't know that there's much more to add than what you've just said, which is they speak to the quality of your deliverable. They say, I know this person, having worked with them on such and such a project, and this was the quality of the work that they did. If there are any metrics that actually can measure, you know, and depending on what it is that you do, it can be a little difficult to assess that. But if you have metrics where you can say, you know, we got this much traffic coming to our stores, or this much attention, or whatever it is, but if there's some way that you can actually speak for it, or if it is actually an event, if she's in events management, and the events that the person that she did is an event that's well known in the company, then that makes it even easier, because then it's a question of saying, oh, you remember such and such that happened at such and such a place? She's the person who's behind it. And then that kind of speaks for itself. Your referee would not need to say anything beyond that, because then everybody's going to start talking about, oh my gosh, wasn't it so much fun? Wasn't that so well done and whatnot? And that's something else that the referee could actually do to talk about, you know, certain aspects of whatever was delivered that were outstanding and maybe talked about in the office around the water cooler and so forth. But yeah, that's the sum total of my contribution.
Cool. Thank you. That's awesome. Thank you very much for that. Really appreciate that contribution. I don't know if any of you guys want to add anything. Otherwise, I can just tighten that, the responses Zui and I gave, and then move forward maybe to any questions you guys may have on the call that you'd like to bring forth. But then there's this question that Norma added. So maybe I'll also touch on that. So my in closing this question from Amanda, I would say in adding to what Zivu said, the other thing is it's not a bad thing for somebody to know you. If anything, it's actually a good thing. I don't think we have to hide relationships. We have, at least that's from my experience. I don't believe that we have to hide relationships we have with people. If anything, we should encourage people to mention that. It's just the right thing to do anyway, for people to be transparent and full disclosure. You know, if someone says, I know this person and this is how I know them. If you are related, they say, you know, we are related. If they're in a decision-making position, especially where there's a committee, of course they can recuse themselves because of that relationship. But I don't think it's something that people should conceal. So relations should be disclosed. And if people can vouch for you, absolutely, you know, they must vouch for you and say that they do know you. And if your work is good, which, you know, I, in fact, fortunately on this call, because one of the criteria that people got on the program was that they must have some good stuff, you know. So fortunately on this call, you guys are good at what you do. So there's no reason for people to fear vouching for you. So they should. In terms of honest feedback, more than anything, I think it kind of, when I was listening to you, Norma, it reminded me of what I said on this week's lesson. On last week's Q&A, where I was asked the question about no. In fact, even last week's lesson where I talked about no. That you must encourage no, you must invite no. And I think the principle also applies in people being honest with you. You know, you need to make people comfortable to tell you the truth if that's what you want. And one of the ways to do it is to basically say to them, look, I'm always looking for ways to get better. You know, when you look at the stuff that I submitted, what would you do to improve it? Because I'm always, every time I submit a proposal or I do a presentation, I always want to take away something that can help me improve it. What would you, if you were me, what would you improve on what I've done? You see, when you ask for critical feedback in that way, you actually make people comfortable to be honest with you than when you say, give me feedback, you know, or when you say, give me honest feedback. There's just something about the word honest, you know, that kind of comes across when people hear it, you know, it still makes people like feel a bit unsafe because they're wondering, do you honestly want honest feedback? But when you ask for it and they know why you want honest feedback, like you want to improve, now they feel like they're helping you by giving it to you in a way that it is to help you improve. So I don't know if that makes sense. So people want to feel safe more than anything. They want to feel safe to be honest with you. But if your question doesn't give them that certainty that you'll still love them after they told you the truth, people will not tell you the truth. They will say, oh, it was good. It was really, really good. But when they know that you want this honesty because you really want to improve and they'll be doing you a huge favor by telling you how you can improve, then people will be comfortable in giving you that feedback. I don't know if this answers your question, Norma. I see Flo has raised her hand. Let me do this. Let me let Flo on the line, and then after that, Norma, I'd like you to comment if this question has been answered so that we can move forward. So Flo, please unmute yourself and comment.
Hi, So, see, I wanted just to add, Megan, what you were saying just now, to say that the whole issue of how you ask for feedback also maybe determines how you get it. Because if the question is asked in a way that, I mean, if you're just asking for somebody to give you feedback and you're like, oh, please give me feedback, and you are just maybe asking for it in passing, you will get a very different kind of feedback as opposed to employing a different strategy, maybe in asking for it. So maybe that is what I wanted to add, to just say, maybe how Norma asked for it as well would then solicit a honest feedback, you know, just in terms of finding the right space, the right time to ask for it, and perhaps employing different strategies to get their feedback that you are looking for, as opposed to just being casual about it. Because again, if people know you and you are a person that offers the service, there is that relationship again. So if you are just asking in passing, I'll just say, oh, no, it was fine. But again, if we position a conversation and you are asking for specific things, then perhaps the responses could be different and maybe more detailed and enlightening. That was my contribution.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Sean. Okay, Zibu, I saw you came in. I don't know if you still want to chip in.
Just to add to what Phil just said, I just encountered something quite recently, which is essentially a feedback mechanism where you ask for close and then grows. And I think Norma's question, what I always think about is that your average person is nice, and nice people don't like to tell you negative things. They don't want to, nobody wants to cut a person down. And, you know, I think frankly, COVID-19 makes it even more likely that no one wants to cut you down, because it's like, we're all struggling, you know?
Yeah.
But I think when you, again, to go back to Phil's point about when you phrase it, or when you request the feedback in a way that makes the other person comfortable, it really helps. And I loved the use of, okay, so do you have any grows? Do you have any glow? Well, we start with the glows, because then it allows the person to start with, you know, the positive feedback, and then are there any grows? And and it just feels less less aggressive, less belligerent. And at least in the context that I encountered it, I felt that it actually invited conversation.
Lovely. Thank you so much. Thanks, Zibu, and thanks, Flo. Norma, do you want to step forward and just give us your take?
I like the way you say step forward. Thank you. Yeah, I've never looked at it that way. And I think also what you mentioned, I think it was sure around the fact when you know the people, it ends up being very casual. And so just from a strategic rephrasing it, that's the lesson I've taken out. Thank you very much, Zibu, around the glows and the grows, because a lot of the times people are scared to tell you, but this is how you can improve. And because also I think when you've had a long-standing relationship, it's easy for people to just not even think when they give you the feedback, because they're like, yeah, no, we know you, but you know, you've always done this. And yet inside you are actually crying for constructive feedback that could take you to the next level. So I appreciate both answers, and I've written them down. Thank you.
All right. Okay. Like I said, I only received two questions for this week. Norma, you mentioned that you tried to send an email with your questions and it didn't go through. So maybe let's take it from there and move forward with the questions that you already have. Maybe give us another question from the list that you've got from this week's lesson. I'm very strict about the questions we take on these calls. I try to contain them within the lesson that we are tackling. So they need to relate to this week's material. Norma?
Unfortunately, mine was a mixture of both first lesson and second lesson. So, in fact, the feedback one was based on this week's lesson. So I'm glad Amanda asked the question. So I guess we're fine. I don't want to then mix up lesson one and two. So I'm good.
Okay. But yeah, what I would like to ask is that please still try and resend questions. So that I can answer them at a different time and upload them under last week's. Because I assume you guys will be reviewing these materials over and over and over. I don't think just because last week is behind us, it means you're never going to go back. You're just looking forward to the next episode. Hopefully you'll keep revisiting your notes and reviewing the materials. They say repetition is the breakfast of champions. So we got to keep repeating, repeat until we get bored. Okay, cool. I'm not sure you have to leave in like 10 minutes. So I didn't get anyone else saying they have to leave early. So maybe let's give you a chance. If you've got any question that you want to ask before you leave, maybe we can handle that for you.
Thanks, Sia. Sia, the question that I have is around the one sentence business plan. I bet you that. And I suppose my challenge comes from having a variety of prospects, because the examples that were used mainly related to who is your target market. You know, I have target markets, so I found myself all over the show. That is what I would have wanted to clarify with you, if not now, at some point. To say, knowing the markets that I'm trying to chase, how would you advise that I go about in phrasing my one line?
Cool. I think this is a brilliant question, and I'm so glad you asked this, because it's a question a lot of businesses, especially small businesses, tend to have. And let me tell you why I'm saying small businesses, because someone may argue that, oh, well, big businesses also have multiple customers. Yes, they do. But for big businesses, they tend to segment better than solopreneurs. You know, a solopreneur will offer these multiple offerings to these different markets, but it's one person. The only departments they have are actually in the head of one person, right? Unlike a larger company where you have real departments with people who are focusing solely on just that one segment. So this question is brilliant. Now, how do you tackle that? So the best way that I've found and that I've helped clients to deal with this question is not to mix things up at once, is to genuinely segment, you know. So if you, let's say you offer speaking services, let's just say, be clear who that's for, you know. You say to yourself, who exactly these questions. So let's talk about speaking. Now, for speaking, what market do you want to serve, you know? Now forget about coaching, forget about consulting, forget about everything else. You say, for speaking, which market do I want to serve, you know, and narrow that down. And again, this becomes a problem for small businesses, because people have the fear of narrowing things down, because they think if they narrow things down, they'll be leaving out all the other markets, all the other people who should be buying from them. The problem with that, when you can't narrow things to specific markets, you end up being too vague. And your message ends up becoming very dilute, because it's not clear who you're talking to. It's almost like writing a book. This is actually, that example applies very well here. When you write a book, people would say, or if you've written a book, they would say, when you are writing, or I meet a lot of people who say, I want to write a book. And then I say, for who? Who do you want to write it for? Or who is this book you are writing? Who's the target market? They will say, everybody. You see, that's a wrong answer. because anything that is for everyone is actually for nobody. Because when you're trying to cater to everybody, you actually dilute your message because nobody will stop and listen. I think the best way to think about this, imagine you were at a party and you were having a conversation with one person. And in this room, it's noisy because everybody's talking to everyone. In fact, imagine you were at a party in a foreign country. Let's say you were in Paris and you were at this party and everybody in the room is speaking French. And you are having a conversation with someone and you overhear somebody on the other side of the room speaking Zulu and you're a Zulu speaking person. Even though you were not part of that conversation, that will catch you, that will grab your attention immediately. You were like, whoa, 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 did I just hear somebody speaking Zulu in this room? Who's that? You know. Now that's what them speaking in a language that that only connects with you or that is personal to you, you have no choice but to stop and be interrupted in whatever you're doing. And in many ways, when we sell things, people don't wake up in the morning thinking about us. They don't wake up in the morning even knowing what the solution to their problem is. But what they wake up with is a problem, right? So when your message comes in, whether it's an email or your ad on social media or other digital platforms, when they come, or even in a newspaper or radio for that matter, when they hear your message, if that message resonates with the conversation they're already having in their head, it will stop them right on their track, on their tracks. But if your message is lukewarm, it will never be personal to anybody. I hope that makes sense. But then the other question that follows up to this is, but Sia, what if speaking leads to consulting? What do I do then? If I'm going to segment speaking and just, you know, say this is my market for speaking, but what if my speaking market is the same market I want to do consulting with? Now that comes back to question three of our one sentence business plan, where question three says, let's say now, what market do you want to serve? Let's say as a speaker, you want to speak to CEOs and managers and executives of property management and facilities management organizations, because you've got this expertise that they can benefit from. So that becomes, let's say, question one, that's the market you serve. What product or service do you want to sell that market? So the first thing will be my speaking services. They bring you in, you speak for an hour, and they get to experience you. They get to get a taste of your value through your speaking. Then the question number three says, what will you sell to people who buy that product or service? Meaning, what will you sell now to people who bought your speaking services? What's the next thing that they have? Then it's your consulting. Then you say, well, after I've spoken to them, the next offer I make is, why don't I come into your organizations and offer you guys my consulting services, right? So can you see now? So you have to look at your offerings and actually decide if they are completely separate for these various markets that you serve, or if there are any overlaps. Because if there are overlaps, then you can line them up the way the one sentence business plan is phrased, where you lead with this, and then the follow-up becomes the next, you know. Norma, I see that you've raised your hand. I'm gonna hang 10 a bit before I let you in. I'm not sure I have to leave in like 2 minutes. So I wanna bring her back on just to make sure that this kind of answers her question.
Correct, yeah, thank you so much. No, I'm loud and clear. I heard you and yeah, makes sense, thank you.
Cool stuff, all righty. Are you leaving now?
I'll hang out around for 5 minutes, then I'll leave, thanks.
Okay, cool. You can just sneak out quietly out of the room. But anyway, if we don't get to chat, have a great one. All right. Okay. My show is still on the line. Let me make this announcement, guys. Next week's lesson, I will send this on email tomorrow, but I'd like to just take advantage of this opportunity. Next week's lesson, our Monday lesson, will not be a recorded. I'm not just going to send you a recording. If anything, I would like it to be a live call. Let me tell you why. Because I want us to go through the framework that I taught you this week. I actually want us to do it live for your businesses. Because what I was teaching you this week was my business. But now I gave you work to do. I gave you questions and I asked you to submit your, let's call it homework, by Saturday. One of the things I asked of you was to draft a letter or an email. You know, I just say letter, but really it's probably going to be an email that you would send to your potential partners. Kind of, you could use, as I said, you could use the example of the JSE letter that I gave you. So on Monday, I will select maybe one or two of those, depending on the time we've got. I'll select one or two of those, and we will unpack those together following the framework that I taught you this week. So our Monday call, I repeat, will be a live call. It will be at 2 o'clock. It will be 2 hours from 2 to 4 on Monday. If you can't make that call, that's fine. You're still going to get a recording of the call. So as much as I'm not just going to send a recording on email, after that call, there will be a recording available. But if all of you can make it, I'd really be grateful. But on Saturday, please, please, please send me your answers to the homework that I gave you so that it helps me prepare for Monday. So that's the announcement I want to make on the call. Like I said, I'll send that on email tomorrow, and I'll also send the link to our meeting on Monday. That's all I wanted to say. Norma, I can bring you back on the line if you still want to say something.
Thank you very much, Flo. I think today is really a blessing for me because I'm getting a lot of answers. And just the fact that, Sia, you've spoken about given speaking as an example. So in speaking, you also have subsects. So as a speaker, you can be a speaker, you can facilitate, you can voice over, whatever. So my question is, do you then further break those down as well? How does one do that? Because you obviously, I guess, don't want to lump all of that together, even though they are under one, heading?
Sure. Great. That's another great question, Norma. There are really many ways to do this. This is really just me giving a disclaimer here. Just because I'm saying, I'm recommending a certain way, I don't want you guys, because you may disagree, so that's another thing. You are more than welcome to disagree with me. I can just tell you what I know, what has worked for me, and what I've seen with clients and all that stuff. So to answer your question, Norma, I would say the best way, what I've found to really work for me, work very well for many years, is to always think from a client's point of view. Because everything we sell, everything we offer, is merely a prescription to a diagnosed problem. So if you look at all the services you've got, you are basically a doctor who's prescribing. You know, what you have is you are offering it because it benefits somebody, but it doesn't benefit everybody. It only benefits those people whom we have diagnosed to have a need for what we are offering. So the mistake I see with most business owners is that we tend to fall in love with our products and our services, and we get out there in the world, putting a spotlight on the things we do, and we don't do enough listening to what people are screaming for, to what people are crying about. Because if we did that, if we listened for what people wanted, and by people, I don't mean, I'm not saying that there's a group of people out there that are crying with one voice. What I mean is that every individual who matters to us, either a potential client or just a person you just met who matches the type of people you work with, it's important to listen. What is their problem? And because that's your opportunity to diagnose, you see, and then you prescribe the most relevant of your offerings. So in summary, what I'm really saying is that you must be comfortable to break those things down further. Because for instance, in my years, I started speaking in 2008. The first paid speech that I did was in 2008. But I always refused to do anything, to have anything to do with facilitation. Because for me, first of all, the first time I was requested to facilitate, I reacted, the way I would react when someone wants me to speak. What I did was to send them, my speaking kit, which also included our fee, because they wanted to know, they always ask, what's your rate? so I worked out what my rate would be. And it was, I fell off the chair when these people responded that for facilitation, this is how much they pay, and they only pay per hour. I think it was like 1,000 rand or 3,000 rand, and I quoted them 40,000 rand, for an hour of my speaking. So this was like probably 8-9 years ago, and I knew that facilitation was never a thing for me. So I never even bothered with that line of work. So I would separate the two. Because people who would invite you, they may be the same type of people, but those things are solving two different problems. When they invite you for facilitation, it's a completely different reason than when they invite you for speaking, and that goes for voiceovers. That's a whole other offering, because there are people who do voiceovers and they don't do speaking and they don't do facilitation, So it's important to see those as three different packages, and they are prescriptions for three different problems that you would have diagnosed. So I would separate the three because it removes ambiguity. And the key that I think most people should take out of this is that you want to get in, if it means choose the best thing that gets you in at that time, because it's easier to grow within an organization than to get in. So the mistake I see with a lot of people is that they want to throw everything at the company. I do all these million things, and they confuse the heck out of everybody within that company, and they end up missing out on being booked. Another thing I want you to think about is yourself. When you are looking for a specific solution, and you Google, and what you find is that there is one company that specializes on that solution. And there's a company that is a generalist, that like a jack of all trades, a company that does everything. You will gravitate towards the specialist. So it's always important to remember to position yourself as a specialist on any one thing that you are offering, than to come across as this bloated jack of all trades, because people always wonder, what are you good at? I hope that, I could go on. Obviously, we don't have hours for me to really, because it's a topic I'm very passionate about, the whole thing about positioning. But I'm hoping that this clarifies your question, Mama. But if I haven't, by all means, chip in, and I'm happy to go ahead, to go on.
Clarified 100%. Thank you very much.
Pleasure. All righty. I think I can take one more question, guys. Before I let you guys go for the evening. Ash, your hand is up. So please unmute yourself, step forward, and fire a direct and succinct question so that we can dissect it and unpack it.
Yes. So I am just struggling a little bit to understand the relationships between various parties, as we are speaking about corporate partnerships and sponsorships. So I'll give you an example. So let's say, for example, my business wants to make a difference in affordable housing or inclusionary housing, right? Then let's say, for example, I want to facilitate an event that is going to be adding value to the executives of affordable housing institutions. So that's basically my target market. I'm wanting to add value to affordable housing institutions. And From that event, there could possibly be, you know, business between myself and the various affordable housing institutions. Then I am viewing a corporate partner or corporate sponsor as almost a third party that could possibly be partnering in this relationship. But the way that I see it is that I am almost fulfilling a different need for them. So for me, what would be useful going forward as we, you know, dissect everyone's examples is to distinguish between the target market that we are serving, and then also the partner and the sponsor that we are bringing on, and then also making clear, you know, how what kind of money flow opportunities we could take advantage from both of those things. Because I think in the example of Hlo that you gave, you were saying that she, for example, does business, or her target market is facilities manager executives. And for me, all I saw there isn't that her client, and so. You know, so where's the, so what's the partnership or sponsorship opportunity there?
Okay, can I grab it right here, Ash? I don't know if you still have more to say, but I think I got your
point. Okay, cool.
Okay, let me help you understand. There are two things. At least there are two things that I took from your comment and your suggestion and of course the question that you asked. Let me start with your comment and suggestion. You were talking about distinguishing between your target market. In your case, you mentioned institutions and executives in the, can't remember how the word, the exact term you used, like low income housing or whatever.
Affordable housing, yes.
And then you also talked about corporate partners. So I like that point. And let me say that it is one of the things I will be touching on going forward. For instance, just to clarify for people to use a broader example, let's just say you want to support a nonprofit. Let's just say it's a Rotary Foundation. Let's say you want to partner with a Rotary because you've got something that could benefit them. But you don't want Rotary to pay you for your offering because you feel they're a nonprofit. They shouldn't be, you know, taking money from their already limited resources. But rather, you want to bring in a corporate, let's say Vodacom, to pay you for your services or your products so that those products or services can be given to Rotary, maybe in partnership between yourself and Vodacom. But there's this third party, which is the beneficiary in this case. So I will be talking about that in some of our upcoming lessons. So that's the one thing, at least I hope I got that right from the example you used.
Yes,
that's the
yes.
one thing I got. Okay, cool, perfect. So that will be covered. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yes.
The second, I want to come to your question. Can you hang time?
Okay.
Please hang time for me so that I don't lose my thoughts around the things you've already said, and then I'll unmute you again. And then you asked me about Chloe, where she asked a question about the one sentence business plan, and she was saying that she's got all these various markets. And then you also brought up, and in my response, because it was not her, it was me. In my response, I mentioned facilities managers and property managers in trying to answer her question. And then I think that's where the confusion started for you, because you know that her full-time job, because she's got a corporate job, she's a director for a facilities management company. So with me using that example of facilities managers, I think that brought a confusion. You were like, wait, yeah, but that's her employer. Is that her partner? What's this got to do with partnership? Now, let me unpack that. The question she was asking was relating to something very specific on this week's lesson, which was the one sentence business plan. And let me talk about that briefly. The one sentence business plan that I included in this week's lesson has absolutely nothing to do with partnerships per se, but it has everything to do with business. Because what I said in the lesson was that if you're going to be going out there to looking for partners and partnerships, it's an inside out job. You've got to be so clear about what your business is about, what your offering is about. Hence, I brought in the one sentence business plan, because I know that what it does, it makes it easy, because a lot of people, because they offer so many things, it becomes very difficult for them to segment these things. But when you've got a one sentence business plan, you are able to be very succinct in your messaging, to be very clear in terms of who your market is, what it is you sell to them, and what else you've got to offer them in the long term. And more importantly, how the heck do you even get hold of them? You know, how do you get them? So when the reason I taught that is because I feel it's very important for business. Because we are all running businesses, we are all starting things, we all have projects. So if we're going to be going out looking for partnerships, we've got to get our story right. So that's why that topic was there. And the question that Jo asked related specifically to that. So it was me basically who created that confusion for you by using facilities managers and property managers as an example. But there's absolutely no link in what I said to what she does for a living. So just, I hope you can decouple those two things, you know, because that was not what her question was. Her question was just about the one sentence business plan. Had nothing to do with facilities managers, had nothing to do with her job. It was just me who used an example that just happened to coincide with her day job. Does that make sense, Ash?
Got you. So I got you on the second one. Then on the first one, I just wanted to mention, so you said you're going to give an example of, let's say, for example, an NPO that doesn't have much money and a partner can sponsor that thing. And so the other thing that I would like you to cover as part of sponsorship is it possible to gain, you know, monetary wise from both the target market and the sponsor at the same time?
Good point. Cool. I will also tackle that, and I'll also go into the pros and cons of doing this way or that way. There are many ways this can be done, but that's a very good point. So I will. I look forward actually to unpacking that for you guys. But yeah, it's coming up. It's definitely coming up in the coming weeks. So cool stuff. It's now 6:03, guys. I don't know if you still want to send another question or if you want us to wrap up so that you can resume with your evening activities. If there's a question, unmute yourself. Maybe this will be the last one, but if there are no questions, you can just unmute yourself and say your goodbyes, and then we just close.
Bye-bye, everyone. Thank you so much for your participation and your questions. Lots of learning for us.
Awesome stuff. Thank you, Zibu. So you and I will touch base on WhatsApp after the call just to schedule the time for tomorrow. Cool? Hey, Ed, I see you are unmuted there. Can you hear me, Ed? Alrighty, maybe Mr. Ed can't hear me. Okay, guys, let's wrap up for the night. I will get this recording prepared, and made available for you guys to consume going forward. Alrighty. Thank you.
Thank you. Looking forward to the recording.
Awesome stuff. Have a great evening.
Have a great evening, everyone. Bye.
Alrighty. Good night, people.